It's the shipping container. Rocking with you on a Wednesday. Chris Cody has internet issues, so he's going to his dad's house. But we bring in Dan Lebatard, and I want to start this local hour today with a name that you may not have thought about over the last decade. Francisco Cervelli.
I thought about him last night. That was amazing. You can't lose that game. You can't lose that game. If people don't know what we're talking about, the Marlins are down 4-1. They get a runner on second base in the ninth. Then, if you love the Blue Jays, you're so mad at your reliever because he walks a guy for no good reason on a 3-2 breaking ball. And then Francisco
Cervelli.
Cervelli. Is he Italian? Is he Hispanic? Is he both?
I remember looking up this thing when he was playing for the Yankees like a decade ago. He's Venezuelan.
Mike, we need to do something on just names that connote backup catcher because it's one of the first I think of when I just think of guy who's going to give you about 40 games a year. And last night he had the hit of his lifetime, 3-0 pitch. They let Francisco go 3-0. And as soon as he hit that ball, he knew it and he double fist pumped. And it was one of the saddest things I've ever seen in a minor league ballpark in Buffalo. It just goes into the stands. It's empty. The whole thing. Tony, tell me I'm wrong about this. The whole thing felt minor league. Like, you look at that and you're like, man, those two teams trudged to that ballpark for the homeless Toronto Blue Jays in Buffalo. And then they've got to stay extra time because this Francisco Cervelli guy hits a home run on a 3-0 pitch when everyone wanted to go home.
If it isn't sad enough that the Marlins and the Blue Jays are playing, then you look around the stadium and you're like, God, this is so sad. I feel so bad for people that have to actually play here on a regular basis. Imagine the minor league guys are like, all right, we're here in Buffalo. I guess we're going to play until something happens.
Mike,
it was sad.
It looked so minor league. You're watching this and it looked like Francisco Cervelli on a rehab assignment somewhere in the minor league.
That looked like indie ball, but there was one thing that wasn't minor league. Roy, those powder blue Jays unis, I know you're a fan.
Oh, yeah, they're excellent. Oh, I love them. I love them. The entire city of Buffalo is going through a jersey change, too. So the Sabres changed their colors. They're now royal blue. They look like the original Sabres now. It's just like a jersey. Oh, I love it.
Are you guys made happy by seeing Bichette's kid in a uniform just sort of...
That team is so fun because you have Bichette's kid, you have Vlad Guerrero's kid, there's someone else. Is it Yastrzemski, like a great-grandkid?
Well, no, is he on the Blue Jays? He was on the Giants last I checked.
I think there's
grandchild of Yastrzemski.
Yeah, there's another legacy MLB-er on the Buffalo
Blue
Jays.
Is this your wheelhouse, Roy? A legacy Blue Jay that is a romantic night 25 years ago had by a major leaguer we loved back when we...
Biggio's kid.
Oh, Biggio's kid's on the team, too. Oh, my God. You can't lose that game, Mike. Were you up watching that game? You fell asleep at halftime of the Heat game the night before, but you stayed up for that?
So, sports last night was kind of crazy. Last night was my last night at home. It's really like my last night for television. So, if you think I was out of it before, oh, Nelly. But sports were popping off last night.
What do you mean last night for television?
Well, because I'm moving into a home, but because don't ever move during a pandemic, I'm not getting a TV or furniture to watch a TV until like mid-September at the earliest. It's going to be difficult. Thankfully, I still have my townhome, so if there's a game that I really have to see, I can run home
Will a cable guy come to your house with expedience now or not during a pandemic?
I have like this one crappy TV at my new place because I'm upgrading my whole... I have like 10-year-old television, so I need to upgrade my whole home theater experience. So I have this like one crappy LG that survived, and that'll be where I watch sports streaming. But either way, sports were going crazy last night, and I was watching the 5-overtime game between Columbus and Tampa Bay on my main TV, and then Twitter was going nuts with Dame Time, and you know how I love Damian Lillard, so I went to watch that game on the second TV, bumped the Marlins game out, so I missed a whole Logan Forsythe home run that got overturned and was called foul. It seemed like an incredible game in Buffalo.
An incredibly sad, happy game.
Yeah, but I can get up for some of the bubble games that have playoff implications. Like the Blazers games, those are fine.
Mike, all the baseball games have playoff implications.
Which is why I've been watching a hell of a lot more baseball this season than I anticipated. Also, I'm in a fantasy league with John Isner, And I, but we were texting about the five overtime game because, of course, John Isner.
You and Isner were?
I'm like, Isner, are you playing for the Blue Jackets? Because this is ridiculous. Wait, he's a like, minute. I love it.
Wait a minute. You're having a texting relationship with John Isner, basically the only tennis player outside of Marty Fish that this show has ever fallen in love with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm in a fantasy group chat with him. So if there is a sporting event that's going 6+ hours, you know I need to get John Isner to weigh in on it. So I was just watching that. It was an incredible game, and it was only until like that last overtime period where the players were actually starting to skate a little slow. And I don't know if, Roy, did you see how Tampa Bay won that?
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Hold on a second. How many shots on goal were there in that game? Players skating around slow. It wasn't until the fifth overtime period that you could see that they all were moving around as slow as Oladipo was on Monday night.
So, Roy, correct me if I'm wrong, but this was the backup Blue Jackets goalie that was forced to start. This isn't even Bobrovsky's replacement. This is a replacement for Bobrovsky's replacement. And Corpusalo. I think he saved damn near 90 pucks last night, which I was looking it up because I had like the most fire tweet saved in my draft stand because Bobrovsky saved 109 total in his entire Islanders series. So I was just hoping for Corpusalo.
You were trying to get over 109?
I wanted Corpusalo, the replacement for Bobrovsky's replacement, to save more shots in a single game than Bobrovsky did in his entire play-in series. But that was nuts. The hockey playoffs are always great, and I thought you'd lose a little something without fans, but the quality of the games are tremendous, Roy.
Yeah, Corpusalo had 85 saves in that game. That's an AHL record. There was 151 shots on goal last night.
What is it? It was either the fourth or fifth longest game in NHL history. It was so long that it was supposed to be a doubleheader in Toronto. The Hurricanes-Bruins game got postponed to today at 11 a.m., so we have a playoff game at 11 a.m. because the Blue Jackets and Lightning played essentially 2.5 games last night.
I love that hockey as an entity has to walk all over North America, successfully executing quietly a bubble, and after a five overtime game, hey, what the hell do we have to do around here for you people to pay attention? You started the show with Francisco Cervelli. Like, what do we have to do? Five overtimes. We give you great hockey every playoff year. We give you unbelievable hockey. Our players are zombies willing to play through any manner of pain, including severed heads, in order to give you five overtime hockey when Mike limps into the analysis with, I felt like I saw them getting tired in the fifth overtime. I finally saw the game slowed down in the fifth overtime.
Popeye Jones's kid played over an hour of ice time last night. Roy, it's insane. And I wanted to get to exactly how Tampa Bay won that game because I felt so bad because the last line of defense before Corpusalo, somebody got pegged high in the shoulder with a puck and they were so tired that they just slunk away saying, ow! And then it opened up a rebound and Tampa Bay put it away for their first clear shot on goal since the first period. That Columbus Blue Jackets team is so congested, so not fun to play.
Yeah, you get deep into an overtime game, deflections start to matter even more. And that's what happened. Overtime games, like 30 goals like that end up happening and then boom, game over.
But I do want that happen. But I do end up getting real mad watching how great these games, year in and year out, we always say, man, the NHL playoffs are so good, so dramatic. I love that we don't do the 4-on-4 penalty. That's fine for the regular season. The shootouts, that's fine for the regular season. But I love the fact that a game can go the length of a John Isner match, right? But here on the mothership, ESPN just sort of drives a conversation. Look, you get Rinaldi on the NHL beat, he will have you invested in tuning into the Columbus Blue Jackets because he will find the story that gets you invested. We've seen it with El Trafico. When ESPN actually puts its resources and its storytelling capabilities behind something, they'll get you to watch. It's proven. But since we don't have a normal traditional television contract, I know they're on ESPN Plus occasionally with the NHL, we ignore this sport. And for a network that's going back to sports, take me back to the glory days of SportsCenter where we covered everything equally.
And keep in mind, this game's still in the afternoon. If this was a regularly scheduled game that was outside of a bubble, this game would have ended at like 2:30 in the morning.
Yes.
So everybody would have been asleep.
Well, let's consider this for a second. What Mike just did, I want you to sort of stand back and understand that what just happened is a sport during a pandemic successfully executed a bubble in a way that allowed for a playoff game that started in the afternoon to knock another playoff game off of television until this morning, because it went five overtimes and we again started the show wondering what was the nationality of Francisco Cervelli, a lifetime backup catcher, because he hit a 3-0 home run last night in the saddest baseball stadium you have ever seen in the major leagues. And that hockey game had electricity with no fans. And what I am telling you is, I want you to imagine, because many of you were not watching this game. So you got a 4-1 game in the ninth. The Marlins, the up and coming Marlins, the trying to conjure ways for us to care.
Can you answer me this question? Because I stopped watching Major League Baseball for about a week. Luckily, the Marlins weren't playing that week, but I missed a weekend series with the Mets. And I know they won one of those games, but lost a series. Have the Marlins played a home game?
I thought last night was supposed to be their first home game, so imagine my surprise when I turned on the television and I saw the saddest ballpark you will ever see in the big league.
I mean, oh, it's a minor league ballpark experience, but it's actually not the one that they normally play.
That's correct.
Can anyone answer me this? Have the Marlins...
No, I think the answer's no. I thought the first one was supposed to be last night. I thought I was tuning in for the first Marlins game last night, and so... By the ninth inning, you've got one out. You've got the Marlins down three runs. They've got a runner on second, and the Blue Jay reliever is wild. And I'd be so mad at him if I was just all the Blue Jays, where I'm in sad Buffalo, I'm homeless, and this guy can't throw strikes and decides, you know what I'm going to do here against the minor league Marlins in Buffalo? I'm going to fool this guy with a 3-2 breaking ball. You watch this. Now, it doesn't matter if he gets on base. It doesn't matter if that dude hits a home run. I think it was Anderson. Was it Anderson that he was facing? And it's a 3-2 pitch, and he's like, breaking ball. I'm going to go breaking ball here. And he throws it out of the zone. And then he's rattled. He's like, oh, no, my teammates are mad at me right now. They're going to have to stay extra time in this sad ballpark. Ball one, ball two, ball three. And the only way Francisco Cervelli is ever hitting a home run in this spot on you is if he knows exactly what's coming. And so Mattingly gives him the 3-0 swing away.
Wait a second. Why are we giving Cervelli the neon green light at 3-0 with a pitcher that's wild? Like, I understand he hit it out of the park.
But he knew it. The best part is he turns to his dugout and he
Mark McGwire.
Shakes both fists. And if you had looked in the Blue Jay dugout, you would have seen all the Blue Jays shaking their fist at their reliever. You asshole. We wanted to leave here. We got to go now tonight. The Buffalo bars aren't even open. We got to head into Buffalo with the remainder of our evening, and you're making us stay here for a 10th inning that's going to start with runners on second base.
The Marlins have not played a game at Marlins Park yet, despite being 2-0, have a home record because the game was moved to Baltimore.
That is, I mean, baseball is so mutated. It is, I'm in. This is crazy.
I want you to think about what I'm about to say. The Marlins last night have not played a home game, and last night they played against a team that was homeless. So last night, you do the riddle on that. You do the riddle on the Marlins last night played a team that was homeless. The Marlins have not yet played a home game.
And the St. Louis Cardinals are harder to find than Mark Emmert at this point. I have no idea where the Cardinals are.
Mike, how about this stat? Speaking of riddles, the Pittsburgh Pirates are 4.5 games behind the St. Louis Cardinals, who have played 5 games. How bad are the Pirates? The Pirates have played all their games, and they're 4.5 games behind the Cardinals, who've only played 5 games.
I love baseball like this, and I love the fact that the season started, and the Blue Jays didn't have a home. And the day, hours before the very first pitch of the season, Major League Baseball decided, yeah, we're going to add some playoff teams. Oh, yeah, in the middle of the season, yeah, we're considering the bubble. Probably the right call for Major League Baseball, but everything is on the fly. This is such an obvious cash grab, and I'm in on it. This is exactly the type of crazy that I needed to draw me back in. 7-inning doubleheaders, are you kidding me? This is amazing. Oh, I love it. I love what baseball is doing. I'm in. I'm learning players' names. I'm finding out that Francisco Cervelli is still in the league, and he's Venezuelan.
How do you guys feel about this? We just did a segment, and what you heard in terms of analysis from our show, the show that's ostensibly still trying to hang on to the fringes of being young, was analysis that included the phrases Dante Bichette's kid, Carl Yastrzemski's grandson,
yes,
Craig Biggio's kid, Vlad Guerrero's kid, and the one that snuck in there sneaky, and Roy, I know you'll appreciate this, in hockey, of all places, Popeye Jones's kid. That was the analysis we just gave America. No,
the best analysis, though, was deflections mean so much more in playoff hockey.
I didn't know that. That was analysis from Roy that I did not know. Put it on the poll whenever you get your internet back, Chris. Put it on the poll at Levitard Show. Do deflections mean so much more during playoff hockey? Or did you say during overtime? You said during overtime.
Overtime.
Right?
Overtime playoff hockey.
Oh, well, naturally. Okay. I mean, you're just stating the obvious, pal. Did you guys see Skip Bayless taking credit for last night?
Oh, did he do that?
Yeah.
No.
He tweeted out, man, Damian Lillard looks like he's playing because someone got him angry or something to that effect. To which I say, that's Damian Lillard all the time. Someone's made Damian Lillard angry all the time. Woj actually had a surprising tweet, and I'll say I love Damian Lillard. I've said he's my favorite player in the league.
Let me set this up for the audience just so they understand, because Lillard had 61 points last night, and Mike Ryan has, I've rarely seen Mike as excited as when Damian Lillard came on this show, I don't know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. It was a while ago, because Mike Ryan loves this dude's swag.
I love, he's just a killer, and he knows it, and he embraces it. Did he say that Paul George's greatest moment came in a Gatorade commercial? I thought I saw that on Twitter, which is actually pretty bang on. But Damian Lillard goes for 60, the third time he goes for 60 this season.
Only Wilt has done that three times in a season.
I mean, that's quite a list. Wilt Chamberlain and Damian Lillard occupy that in the history of the sport. It's incredible. And what's happening in the NBA bubble right now is they have a play-in scenario, right? If you finish within a game of the final playoff seed, to make it fair, since you haven't had the full season, you can do play-ins.
We're going to get Booker and Lillard in a play-in playoff game before the playoffs, aren't we?
Yes, and it's so weird because you can understand players taking a leap season to season, right? But they had an extended layoff here. You essentially had an NBA offseason during the season. So Devin Booker took a gigantic leap, even though that guy could get buckets for days. Didn't he score like 71 time against Boston, I believe? He is absolutely a better player. And I don't know what it is about the bubble. They were actually saying that the sight lines are so much better inside the bubble because you don't have the fans doing all the crazy things. So shooters are absolutely stepping up to the plate. And you're seeing it with Tyler Hero, who's taking a leap. You're seeing it with Damian Lillard, who's a great shooter. The shooters are actually totally locked in this bubble.
Gary Trent Jr. out of nowhere.
Yeah, the sight lines are fantastic.
Devin Booker at 23 years old has the most 30-point games in Suns history. At 23.
That's incredible.
Think about that for a second. Like, when you look at how prolific of a scorer he is at 23 to already have the Suns record with all the past lineage of the Suns to have more 30-point games, like,
they're the only undefeated team in the bubble. And Lillard last night, I don't know the lip readers what else they caught, but he did say, among other things, I think he was shouting at the Dallas bench, right? Put some respect on my bleeping name.
Yeah. Yeah, put some respect on my name. And he might have been shouting at that at Skip Bayless. Who knows? But yeah, and also Carmelo Anthony, apologies to you. You've been good for that team. Hopefully you can make the playoffs, but he's in good shape. It's noticeable how much better shape he is in now. He's making big shots for that team. He's doing the Carmelo things. He's actually playing like a role player, too. He understands
the stuff he wasn't willing to do in Houston and Oklahoma City.
Yeah, it seems as though like that experience outside of basketball kind of humbled him. And now he's still like FOH when he's grabbing a rebound and still doing the mellow things that people love. But it's cool to see him sort of embrace that back seat in Portland. And it's really cool seeing what Damian Lillard is doing, because I think to his detriment, this is a player that should be on a championship team, and but he is not. You see how he lashes out with poison to anybody that jumps ship and tries to form super teams. Just not him. Inevitably, it'll be the freezing cold take thing in 4 years when he realizes a championship's what his career needs. But he means so much to that city. He says all the right things in terms of a superstar that is committed to making it work there. How can you not love this player?
Give the people the backstory on Skip Bayless, because the backstory, as I understood it, was Skip Bayless.
He doesn't believe in Dame
doesn't
Time.
Doesn't believe in Dame Time. That is blasphemy.
He is Dame Time agnostic.
And now Lillard will beef with people, but he's got a pristine public image. Him calling Bayless a clown surprised me, because Damian Lillard doesn't really call media members clowns.
He doesn't go after media members. He goes after his colleagues, and he goes after people eggs on Twitter. I remember he absolutely assassinated a dude because he had a bad-looking smile. It was just, you know, typical assassin Damian Lillard stuff. And Damian Lillard will come at anyone who takes a shot at him and disrespects him. He's the little guy. He went to a small school. He's been looked over most of his life. He's in a sea of giants. And he embraces the killer. This is weird to say because there are better players in the league, but there is nobody in the league that I would rather have in that situation. That's such a sports talk radio topic, but it matters. The guy has sent people home time and time again, and you want that killer instinct in the playoffs because shots are not easy to get off, and he always gets off his shot.
The thing that I want in the playoffs, and you've seen both Booker and Lillard do this, is they've just distorted where you have to pick a guy up from. Like, it's just crazy. The other day, Booker just stepped over the three-point line and shot. Just stepped over it and shot and made it. And yesterday, not only did Lillard late in that game just over the half-court line sink a three, he got a shooter's roll from out there where the ball bounces straight up into the sky and then goes into the rim.
Tony, I know you've been watching a lot of the bubble basketball because you're a huge NBA fan. I want to talk about Giannis Antetokounmpo a little bit and how he's officiated, because this is the first time I've been able to see the Bucks with regularity, because they're in different TV windows than the Miami Heat and their games are always nationally televised. It is impossible to officiate a game with Giannis. It's like Shaq rules. He's so big, so strong. One step, one twirl, and he goes from the three-point line to the hoop.
That shit's crazy, Mike. That's something I've never seen an NBA player able to do that. The evolution of these athletes is not something I would ever want to officiate. It seems impossible.
Look, I was born and raised in the church, but if you want to tell me Giannis Antetokounmpo is evolution, who am I to argue at this point? But one thing I notice about Antetokounmpo that is never called, dude steps out of bounds all the time. All the time. This is happening a lot. I don't know if it's the new court. It does seem a little slimmer for some reason, but they refuse to call Giannis stepping out of bounds. It is the most infuriating thing. Can you tell how much I bet against the Bucks inside the bubble?
What I was just about to ask Tony is, put it on the poll, Tony, at Lebatard Show. More surprising, shitty analysis from the show early in the morning.
Deflections
in playoff overtime hockey, or how often a Buck steps out of bounds?
They're stepping out of bounds all the time. The referees don't see it. They're right there. What are you doing?
I think one of the interesting things about officiating Giannis is that he's such a different, like, animal, a different, like, alien-like being, where a superstar like James Harden, who gets 19, 20 free throws a game, he gets to the hoop at will, right? And he always gets those calls. I feel like Giannis can get to the hoop within one step of the half court line, and he doesn't get them. It's an odd, like, scenario where he's because he doesn't have a jump shot. Let's get serious. Like, if the series comes down to the Bucks needing a big time jump shot from Giannis, they're not getting it from him. They're going to give it to Middleton. They're going to give it to Bledsoe. They're going to give it to DiVincenzo. They're going to give it to somebody else.
The foreign guy.
Giannis. Yeah, exactly. Giannis is not that guy. So for me, if I was Giannis, I'd be like, look, I can't shoot. I'm going to the rim every single time. Can you guys at least give me something?
I want to bounce it to the Heat a little bit, because in that matchup that the Heat had, that got everybody excited because the Heat were up by 20 and then they got, you know, blown out and the Bucks covered easily. Yet another game that I bet against Giannis that I regret. But I don't know how far the Heat are going to get in the playoffs. It's very likely that they get bounced out before the Eastern Conference Finals, right? But here's one thing that I do know in watching the Miami Heat play. that is going to be a pain in the ass team to play. They're going to be annoying. They're going to know how to defend. Bam Adebayo's defense, his ability to switch, his ability to pick up the point guard and not lose a step. That is going to be a very annoying team for Milwaukee if this is the matchup to eliminate.
I thought that one of the things that bothered TJ Warren, if Heat fans had heard us making fun of me for several games, because TJ Warren is going to be one of the guys who wins one of those awards in the bubble. They're going to give awards for the 8 games. I thought that one of the things that happened in that game against the Heat, where he was almost a total non-factor, just kind of invisible for the kind of player who's been the best player in the bubble.
It was a Jeremy Lin game again.
All the time, is not only that when Jimmy Butler was guarding him, he wasn't doing much, and Jimmy Butler was guarding him quite a bit, but when they switch, then he looks at that extraterrestrial Bam guarding him out, you know, near the 3-point line. And I will not ever stop marveling at the fact that in big situations, the Heat put that guy on perimeter players, and he is able at 6'10" to be as athletic and bothersome on small players as he is to big players.
Well, I'm sure you've heard something similar. I've heard in league circles that the Miami Heat like their chances against Milwaukee, specifically because Bam. I think Giannis has actually given his voice to the fact that, yeah, no one can pick me up quite like Bam. He gives me a little bit of problems when he switches on me, because Bam is one of these next evolution type of athletes, and he's so quick on his feet. His lateral movement is so good for a big. He's not as skilled, obviously, as Giannis, but he's quite skilled for a big man. He's starting to initiate the offense a hell of a lot more at the perimeter. Bam Adebayo is also taken a bit of a leap. I don't know if he will ever be that true scoring threat, but in terms of like oozing Heat culture and doing just all world things on the defensive side of the basketball, Bam Adebayo is an absolute star, and he made an all-star game this year.
You remember during the draft when the Heat selected Bam Adebayo and everybody was like, Bam Adebayo, yeah, like that guy didn't even play at Kentucky, like who is this guy? And Calipari was like, this guy's really good, just wait and see. And then all of a sudden, the game evolved within, what, a 2-year span,
right,
where Bam Adebayo is one of the most valuable players for the next 5-6 years?
Yeah, for what that Kentucky team needed. They needed your conventional big. Just park under the basket, get the boards, and kick it out to like the real blue chippers out there that win it for us in the perimeter. But it's funny because Spoelstra said that, you know, we really like Devin Booker, and I wanted the Heat to draft Devin Booker, and it seemed as though it was a Duke Kentucky thing, and they go with Justice Winslow, who's no longer here and has an odd beef with the Miami Heat organization. But then the very next 2 years, it seems as though Pat Riley is trying to make up for that because he has PTSD and just drafts the Kentucky guys in Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero. And for a franchise that historically hasn't drafted well within the first round outside of, you know, Dwayne Wade.
Well, and it's hard to get anything in the middle rounds. He's 11 or 14, right? Wasn't it 14? He wasn't even a lottery pick, was
right
he?
And keep in mind, they're getting guys like Chris Bosh and LeBron James for their first round pick. So if you do it that way, they're drafting mighty fine. But he views the draft picks as, I'm picking at the end of the first round anyways. The real value is as a trade chip. Math has changed a little bit. The rookie contracts make you realize, oh, if I can get this guy and develop him within the first 2 years and I have his bird rights and I sign him to a valuable extension that works for both parties early on, then this is a real important chip. It's not on par with a young quarterback like Russell Wilson. If you get the cheap quarterback, you go all out in the trade market and add weapons, but it's hugely important. And since then, I think Pat Riley has shown that not only can he develop players, because what he's done in the second round and undrafted market has been amazing, he can start drafting quite well in this first round.
I can't believe that we've gone this quickly on a couple of different things. One, you know that the game moved away from Andre Drummond, and then it moved away from Capella too, because it's Bam Adebayo in terms of the evolution of what that looks like at the rim, around the rim, caving in the paint. What he does with Duncan Robinson, if you've seen the numbers on that, it doesn't have, in terms of spacing, a lot of ways to guard that when you've got a pterodactyl swooping in toward the rim and a guy that you have to guard that far out. But one of the other things, I know you guys are tired of hearing Mike Ryan talk about Heat culture, but when you
could have just stopped before Heat culture.
Yeah, I know many of you are tired of hearing Mike Ryan talk. The thing that the Heat have said about, and I told you this, I don't know, 6 months ago, about Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson, where they think of those two players, and I know it's easy to do and almost impossible to recreate, as being something Steph and Clay-like. And even as people are listening to this, they're saying, get out of here, just knock that off. But what you've seen is already Duncan Robinson, the way that he has improved. He's done it this season. You see, it's no longer just shooting. He's doing stuff at the rim where you trust him in ways that Clay around the rim is somebody who misses those clay-ups. Like, yeah, I don't trust weird. Clay around the rim. So you've already seen that evolution from Duncan Robinson. There's just a real-time improvement. You've seen the real-time improvement of Bam, and you're about to see the real-time improvement of Tyler Hero. And that stuff is super exciting when you can actually watch it happen, and you're like, holy shit, those guys are growing, and they're doing it literally right in front of your eyes.
I saw an interesting question posted to Twitter. What is Tyler Hero's ceiling? Because the Heat, by this conversation that Dan is overhearing, they say his ceiling is, you know, Splash Brother, Klay Thompson. I think probably a better comp is Zach LaVine with defense, because Tyler Hero is actually quite a good defender. It'll surprise you, just like everything, because he's a white guy. Because, oh, he'll surprise you with his handles.
Does he know he's white?
Does Tyler Hero know he's white?
That's right, yeah, because I've heard Bomani making the joke that his jersey should have been Listen to Us, and then, you know, some guys on the team came over to him and were like, hey, come on, let's Black Lives Matter. Come on, it's not Listen to Us.
Yeah, he's got this uber-confident game, and he gets up in you on the defensive side to the point that you're really surprised, because out of the draft, everyone was screaming shooter because of the obvious reasons. But he's a really good player, and he's taking a leap within that bubble. And like, to the original point, Tony, I like our chances against Milwaukee, at least to make their lives difficult.
And I think the interesting part that people are overlooking is his willingness to be the playmaker, right? They had the ball in his hands a couple games ago, and all of a sudden he churns out 25, 8, and 10. Like, you're looking at a guy who, and you said the ceiling of Klay Thompson, could this be the Heat's Steph Curry? Right. And I'll say that with a bit of trepidation, because if he learns how to be that playmaker, is there a possibility that he can take over, you know, 2-3 years down the road, being a, you know, a swing guard, but also having the point as one of the things that he can do on a, you know, day in and day out basis?
That's where his game can really develop. And I know he had the impressive counting stats, but there were moments late against Milwaukee where he has Kelly Olynyk on Eric Bledsoe on a switch, and he totally ignores that. It was there for a painful amount of time for him in clutch moments, and he takes a contested shot at the rim. He's absolutely got to fix that if his future is as a distributor. If he's going to take that Gorin role, and now Gorin's back in the starting lineup, so it'll be interesting to see who's actually initiating the offense. I still think it's going to be Jimmy. But if Tyler Hero is going to transition to this Steph Curry, I can score from anywhere, I can play defense, and I can distribute. He absolutely needs to improve his court vision. And it was weird. I thought he saw the Kelly Olynyk, Eric Bledsoe switch, and he decided, no, this is a better option, which is just crazy to me.
Let me ask you guys this question. As it regards Goran Dragic, is he the most underappreciated Heat player in the franchise's history? And I want to throw this out for the audience as well, because I know they hate when Mike Ryan goes Heat Homer. And so I know that they may have heard what it is we were just talking about and said, oh, come on, get out of here, you guys. Like, you sound homer-tastic when you're talking about Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson in the same breath as Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. I know that the reaction is rolling your eyes. What I want to be made clear to the audience is this is not my example. This is an example I have heard the Heat brass use when it comes to what these guys can be. And while I don't see that, I can't dispute that what I've seen over this season from them from the very beginning has surprised me, and what I've seen since then has been growth. So I'm not in the player evaluation business. I don't know how to make the assessment on what those ceilings are. I don't see how Bam could get a good deal better than he already is right now. Like, I don't know how that ceiling gets much higher than where it is right now. But with the other two guys, given that Duncan Robinson was somebody I legitimately thought earlier this season that what I was going to be watching for the rest of my career from Duncan Robinson was Kyle Korver. Nothing at the rim, nothing, no reverse layups, nothing, just everything to space the floor so there's more room for Bam. He has already brought that to his game.
And that's 3 years of development. And And they're doing that with a player like Duncan Robinson, who wasn't highly recruited, who was in junior colleges and had to work his way up. Imagine what he can do, what this organization can do with the likes of Bam Adebayo, that is just so physically gifted, much more than the likes of Duncan Robinson. Although Duncan Robinson...
Why are you doing that?
Sneaky tall.
Why are
Duncan
you doing
Robinson
that?
Is sneaky
Hold
tall.
Hold on a minute. Why do you think that Bam Adebayo looks more athletic than Duncan Robinson?
My eyes...
The interesting thing about Duncan Robinson, too, is that he is the blueprint for Heat culture, right? Like, he's got the Udonis background of, I had to go here, I had to do this to finally get to the point where I'm a successful pro athlete. And it seems to fit exactly what they're doing. He's bought in on the culture because I was a guy that was in a junior college. I had no thoughts or no impressions on being in the NBA, and yet I'm the best shooter in the NBA for the season.
I realize what you've been doing on Duncan Robinson and Bam Adebayo in terms of your analysis in athleticism. While Bam is Duncan, Duncan is named Duncan. Thought it was a good joke.
Yeah, well, I guess, well, you could say if Mike Breen's calling the game, Duncan from outside is Bam, even though he goes Bang. I'm trying to help you out here.
There is no helping me. Not even the loser game show
and
sound.
I had it cranked all the way
not
up.
Not even the loser game show sound wanted to help me there.
It's
touch sensitive.
Your lack of confidence actually came across in how touch sensitive that pad is.
I was touch sensitive there. the loser game show sound simply said to me, leave me out of that joke.
So no one wants to follow me on my lukewarm take that they can merely make someone's life difficult.
I'll go with you, Mike. They can make somebody's life difficult.
That's the new, they can make some noise in the playoffs. That's the diluted version. Put that on the poll, Tony. It is the most diluted version of they can make some noise in the playoffs. They can make someone's life difficult.
I mean, I know I was painted as the Heat homer, and fine, I'll wear it, but I didn't say the Klay Thompson thing. That was Dan. My hot Heat take was that they can make someone's life difficult if they play him. Man, that's going to be a tough out. I'm not even saying they're going to win, folks. And yet, no buy-in from my teammates here. You're all like Tyler Hero, and you have the matchup against Eric Bledsoe, and you're not passing.
This is what I love about what just happened there, all of it. What you just compared to the Miami Heat to is basically your moving situation right now, something that has made your life difficult. You've you've made them a car accident. You've made them an inconvenience. Like, you've made them expired milk, something that just makes your life more difficult.
Yeah, no one wants to clean out a refrigerator, right? You don't think about it when you think about a move. All right, time to clear out the refrigerator. Ew, what is this? Icky thing in the back. Is that part of like a vet? Is that leak? What is that in the back of the refrigerator? No one wants to do these things, but it's necessary. And that's what it's going to be like for the Milwaukee Bucks when they play the Miami Heat in the playoffs.
Wow.
Where that 10-year-old piece of leak in the back of the refrigerator that you don't want to touch.
I love the idea of Antetokounmpo spin moving, opening his fridge, and sitting in one of the corners is Derrick Jones Jr. Just like all arms and legs.
Airplane mode.
They
have a weird looking team that matches up with Milwaukee's weird looking team. And I say weird as someone who's, 6'3" and a white Hispanic. To me, they're all extraterrestrials playing the NBA. Duncan Robinson, I was like, oh my God.
Yes, he's giant. He's like 6'8", right?
Yeah, he's 6'8". He towers over me. I'm like, your face looks small. When I watch you, I don't realize that this person is one of the largest people I've ever stood next to.
Derrick Jones Jr. also, though, is hurt by the fact that he's got the same legs your dog Roma has. Like,
yes, he's got
just
whippet legs.
He's unbelievably skinny, and so it doesn't even make sense that when he's jumping up, it's not even that he's jumping up. He is using one of those water rocket spraying things that lifts you out of the ocean, because He's not jumping up. That can't be those legs that are making him jump like that.
Now, is it going to be a good basketball series when the Bucks play the Heat? I know it's going to be fascinating to watch just because of the bodies that are out on the court and what they're doing defensively and just the physical display of athleticism. But is it going to be like good basketball to watch? Because what the Miami Heat have in terms of like their offense is the only way that you can really go at Milwaukee, which is, let's just bomb it over these ETs out here. Let's just shoot from really far and count on our efficient shooters making it. But is that going to be a fun watch? Is it just going to be guys shooting from really far away?
Can these things coexist, though? Can the two phrases I'm about to use coexist in a playoff series? Fun to watch, and also they're going to make someone's life difficult. Like, those two things, I don't feel like the good teams you just say – they're good. You don't say, like, that's a tier below good, is they're going to make your life difficult. Yeah. That's not good. You're not, because I think they're a good basketball team. I think the Miami Heat are a good basketball team, but I think that you are underpraising them when you say they are simply someone who can make your life difficult. I believe the Phoenix Suns have now earned that status in the playoffs as a team that can make your life difficult, but I'm not yet sure they're a good team.
How tough has this turned into for the Los Angeles Lakers? They thought they would coast, and now all of a sudden, they enter the playoffs, they're probably going to be playing the most informed team in the NBA in that first round. Buku storylines here, Dano. I'm super excited for
it. I thought the storyline was going to be them playing the Pelicans because of all those ex-Lakers, but Lonzo Ball evidently stinks.
Yeah, like, Lonzo Ball, like, he actually took a huge step back in the bubble, and everyone was telling me how good Lonzo Ball is, and the second that I watched this guy, he's terrible. He might actually hurt his brother's draft stock with his performance inside that bubble. One last thing on the Miami Heat before we wrap up the local hour. Jimmy Butler, who oozes Heat culture. You saw the Instagram video that he put out after that performance against TJ Warren.
Can you get me a noise of some sort that I can play every time you say sort of an annoying Heat buzzword? Yes. So that the audience and all of us
best
can know
this is most disciplined.
This is Mike at his most annoying. Because the audience is so tired of your Heat culture stuff.
Right. But I think I'm going to surprise you with this opinion. Jimmy Butler, I've never really liked him as a player. Too inefficient for my taste. He can't really shoot from the outside. I'm numbers driven. But in watching him, I get it. He's essentially the team's point guard. He's a really good defender.
Does a little bit of everything and tries really hard all the time. Like, no, you know he wants it.
Yes, and the whole problem, it seems as though he's been vindicated because he's always been pegged as this, that's a locker room cancer type. But he goes to these situations. That Chicago situation was so bad. That Minnesota team, I mean, they're not in this bubble for a reason. No real leaders on that team. He is looking to be with fellow dogs. Udonis Haslam put his voice to this. And I think he might have been doing that because Carl Anthony Towns' cat. But he's looking to be surrounded by a pack of dogs. And he, I think, now is given the benefit of the doubt. Oh, he was right all along. He wasn't the problem. And now he's in the perfect organization. Everyone agrees because he embodies everything that the Heat are about. And these are young, impressionable kids. And they're all like little Jimmy Butler clones. Even Duncan Robinson has an attitude to him.
Which one does he love the best? Because I get the impression that he likes Tyler Hero the best.
Yeah. I think everyone gets a kick out of Tyler Hero. Because they don't know what to do with him.
It is. I mean, because it is funny, right? Because he's peacocking. He's wearing outfits that usually are not worn by the white guys in the NBA.
He shoots his shot with IG models and those go in. Like, he is absolutely a really confusing, he is this new millennial NBA basketball player that's part IG model, part assassin from the outside. And I think he's just fascinated with Tyler Hero. And Tyler Hero is just like easy to get along with. But everyone, it's just like Jimmy Butler has all his clones right now. And I don't know, like, because Jimmy Butler has a ceiling, right? As a player, no one's putting Jimmy Butler as like the best player on the best team. That would be a huge shock if the Miami Heat win a title with Jimmy Butler as its best player. But they're all like just like really difficult to play, and they all have an attitude problem. And I hate to say it, guys, but I think they're going to make someone's life difficult.
They're going to make someone's life difficult in the playoffs. I got to think, Mike, I really do, that you have a situation with all of those Heat players where one of the things that they love about Jimmy Butler that is one of the reasons that you might not love Jimmy Butler, because some of that stuff clanks at the rim and you don't totally trust him from three. he's the one guy willing to do that thing that no one wants to do, is let me go get the 12 free throws. Let me go neck first into the rim again and again and again. And some of these
and
shots
split
are
him at the end of the game.
The free throws.
And absolutely infuriate you. But he is at Jimmy Butler. If he's on the team that you're playing, you hate Jimmy Butler. I was on the opposite side of that. Every time my team played a Jimmy Butler team, I was like, man, I just don't like this guy. It was hard for me to overcome that. But look, the Miami Heat got an all-star player with a zero cap room. You take that, and you go out to La Careta and you bang your pots and pans because Pat Riley's a godfather and he somehow got an all-star with zero cap room. Don't forget that, by the way. And look what happened to Philadelphia. Once again, vindicated.
He is the face of going to make your life a little more difficult than you would like it to be.
My man!